The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Mark Twain. Chapter 33. A Nigger Stealer. Southern Hospitality. A Pretty Long Blessing. Tar and Feathers. So I started for town in the wagon, and when I was halfway, I see a wagon coming, and sure enough, it was Tom Sawyer, and I stopped and waited till he come along. I says, "Hold on," and it stopped alongside, and his mouth opened up like a trunk, and stayed so, and he swallowed two or three times like a person that's got a dry throat, and then he says, "I ain't ever done you no harm, you know that. So then, what you want to come back and haunt me for?" I says, "I ain't come back. I ain't been gone." When he heard my voice, it righted him up some, but he weren't quite satisfied yet. He says, "Don't you play nothing on me, because I wouldn't on you. Honest Injun now, you ain't a ghost?" "Honest Injun, I ain't," I says. Well, that ought to settle it, of course. But I can't somehow seem to understand it no way. Looky here, weren't you ever murdered at all?" "No, I weren't ever murdered at all. I played it on 'em. You come in here and feel on me if you don't believe me." So he done it, and it satisfied him. And he was that glad to see me again, he didn't know what to do. And he wanted to know all about it right off, because it was a grand adventure, and mysterious, and so it hit him where he lived. But I said, "Leave it alone till by and by," and told his driver to wait. And we drove off a little piece, and I told him the kind of a fix I was in, and what did he reckon we better do? He said, "Let him alone a minute, and don't disturb him." So he thought and thought, and pretty soon he says, "It's all right, I've got it. Take my trunk in your wagon, and let on it's yourn, and you turn back and fool along slow, so as to get to the house about the time you ought to, and I'll go towards town a piece, and take a fresh start, and get there a quarter or half an hour after you, and you needn't let on to know me at first." I says, "All right, but wait a minute. There's one more thing, a thing that nobody don't know but me. And that is, there's a nigger here that I'm trying to steal out of slavery, and his name is Jim, old Miss Watson's Jim." He says, "What? Why, Jim is..." He stopped and went to studying. I says, "I know what you'll say. You'll say it's dirty, low-down business. But what if it is? I'm low-down, and I'm a-going to steal him, and I want you keep mum and not let on. Will you?" His eye lit up, and he says, "I'll help you steal him." Well, I let go all hopes then like I was shot. It was the most astonishing speech I ever heard, and I'm bound to say Tom Sawyer felt considerable in my estimation. Only I couldn't believe it. Tom Sawyer, a nigger stealer. "Oh, shucks," I says, "you're joking." "I ain't joking either." "Well, then," I says, "joking or no joking, if you hear anything said about a runaway nigger, don't forget to remember that you don't know nothing about it, and I don't know nothing about him." Then he took the trunk and put it in my wagon, and he drove off his way, and I drove mine. But, of course, I forgot all about driving slow on accounts of being glad and full of thinking. So I got home a heap too quick for that length of a trip. The old gentleman was at the door and says, "Why, this is wonderful. Whoever would have thought it was in that mare to do it? I wish we'd have timed her, and she hain't sweated a hair. Not a hair. It's wonderful. Why, I wouldn't take $100 for that horse now. I wouldn't, honest. And yet I'd have sold her for 15 before, and thought 'twas all she was worth." That's all he said. He was the innocentest, best soul I ever see. But it weren't surprising, because he weren't only just a farmer. He was a preacher, too, and had a little one-horse log church down back of the plantation which he builded himself at his own expense, for a church and schoolhouse, and never charged nothing for his preaching, and it was worth it, too. There was plenty other farmer preachers like that, and done the same way down south. In about half an hour, Tom's wagon drove up in the front style, and Aunt Sally, she see it through the window, because it was only about 50 yards, and says, "Why, there's somebody come. I wonder who 'tis. Why, I do believe it's a stranger. Jimmy," that's one of the children, "run and tell Lisa to put on another plate for dinner." Everybody made a rush for the front door, because, of course, a stranger don't come every year, and so he lays over the yellow fever for interest when he does come. Tom was over the stile and starting for the house. The wagon was spinning up the road for the village, and he was all bunched in the front door. Tom had his store clothes on and an audience, and that was always nuts for Tom Sawyer. In them circumstances, it weren't no trouble to him to throw in an amount of style that was suitable. He weren't a boy to meekie along up that yard like a sheep. No, he come calm and important like a ram. When he got a front of us, he lifts his hat ever so gracious and dainty, like it was the lid of a box that had butterflies asleep in it, and he didn't want to disturb them, and says, "Mr. Archibald Nichols, I presume?" "No, my boy," says the old gentleman. "I'm sorry to say your driver has deceived you. Nichols's place is down a matter of 3 mile more. Come in, come in." Tom, he took a look back over his shoulder and says, "Too late. He's out of sight." "Yes, he's gone, my son, and you must come in and eat dinner with us, and then we'll hitch up and take you down to Nichols's." "Oh, I can't make you so much trouble. I couldn't think of it. I'll walk. I don't mind the distance." "But we won't let you walk. It wouldn't be Southern hospitality to do it. Come right in." "Oh, do," says Aunt Sally. "It ain't a bit of trouble to us, not a bit in the world. You must stay. It's a long, dusty 3 mile, and we can't let you walk. And besides, I've already told them to put on another plate when I see you coming, so you mustn't disappoint us. Come right in and make yourself at home." So Tom, he thanked them, very hearty and handsome, and let himself be persuaded and come in. And when he was in, he said he was a stranger from Hicksville, Ohio, and his name was William Thompson, and he made another bow. Well, he run on and on and on, making up stuff about Hicksville, and everybody in it he could invent, and I getting a little nervous and wondering how was this going to help me out of my scrape. And at last, still talking along, he reached over and kissed Aunt Sally right on the mouth, and then settled back again in his chair, comfortable, and was going on talking. But she jumped up and wiped it off with the back of her hand and says, "You audacious puppy!" He looked kind of hurt and says, "I'm surprised at you, ma'am." "You sir, why, what do you reckon I am? I've a good notion to take and say, what do you mean by kissing me?" He looked kind of humble and says, "I didn't mean nothing, ma'am. I didn't mean no harm. I thought you'd like it." "Why, you born fool." She took up the spinning stick, and it looked like it was all she could do to keep from giving him a crack with it. "What made you think I'd like it?" "Well, I don't know. Only they told me you would." "They told you I would? Whoever told you's another lunatic. I never heard the beat of it. Who's they?" "Why, everybody. They all said so, ma'am." It was all she could do to hold in, and her eyes snapped, and her fingers worked like she wanted to scratch him. And she says, "Who's everybody? Out with their names, or they'll be an idiot short." He got up and looked distressed, and fumbled his hat, and says, "I'm sorry.
I weren't expecting it. They told me to. They all told me to. They all said, kiss her, and said she'd like it. They all said it. Every one of them. But I'm sorry, ma'am, and I won't do it no more. I won't, honest.
You won't you? Well, I should reckon you won't.
No'm, I'm honest about it. I won't ever do it again.
Till you ask me.
Till I ask you? Well, I never see the beat of it in my born days. I lay you'll be the Methusalem numbskull of creation before ever I ask you, or the likes of you.
Well, he says, it does surprise me so. I can't make it out somehow. They said you would, and I thought you would, but...
He stopped and looked around slow, like he wished he could run across a friendly eye somewheres, and fetched up on the old gentleman's and says,
didn't you think she'd like me to kiss her, sir?
Well, no, I believe I didn't.
Then he looks on around the same way to me and says, Tom, didn't you think Aunt Sally'd she'd open her arms and say, Sid Sawyer?
My land, she says, breaking in and jumping for him. You impudent young rascal, to fool the body so,
and was going to hug him. But he fended her off and says,
no, not till you've asked me first.
So she didn't lose no time, but asked him, and hugged him, and kissed him over and over again, and then turned him over to the old man, and he took what was left. And after they got a little quiet again, she says,
why, dear me, I never see such a surprise. We weren't looking for you at all, but only Tom. Sis never wrote to me about anybody coming but him.
It's because it weren't intended for any of us to come but Tom, he says. But I begged and begged, and at the last minute she let me come too. So, coming down the river, me and Tom thought it would be a first-rate surprise for him to come here to the house first, and for me to by and by tag along and drop in, and let on to be a stranger. But it was a mistake, Aunt Sally. This ain't no healthy place for a stranger to come.
No, not impudent whelp, Sid. You ought to had your jaws boxed. I ain't been so put out since I don't know when. But I don't care. I don't mind the terms. I'd be willing to stand 1,000 such jokes to have you here. Well, to think of that performance. I don't deny it. I was most putrefied with astonishment when you gave me that smack.
We had dinner out in the broad open pasture betwixt the house and the kitchen, and there was things enough on that table for 7 families, and all hot, too. And none of your flabby tough meat that's laid in a cupboard in a damp cellar all night and tastes like a hunk of old cold cannibal in the morning. Uncle Silas, he asked a pretty long blessing over it, but it was worth it. And it didn't cool it a bit, neither, the way I've seen them kind of interruptions do lots of times. There was a considerable good deal of talk all the afternoon, and me and Tom was on the lookout all the time. But it weren't no use. They didn't happen to say nothing about any runaway nigger, and we was afraid to try to work up to it. But at supper, at night, one of the little boys says, Pa, mayn't Tom and Sid and me go to the show?
No, says the old man. I reckon there ain't going to be any, and you couldn't go if there was, because the runaway nigger told Burton and me all about that scandalous show, and Burton said he would tell the people. So I reckon they've drove the audacious loafers out of town before this time. So there it was, but I couldn't help it. Tom and me was to sleep in the same room in bed. So being tired, we bid good night and went up to bed right after supper and clumb out of the window and down the lightning rod and shove for the town. For I didn't believe anybody was going to give the king and the duke a hint. And so if I didn't hurry up and give them one, they'd get into trouble, sure. On the road, Tom, he told me all about how it was reckoned I was murdered, and how Pap disappeared pretty soon, and didn't come back no more. and what a stir there was when Jim run away. And I told Tom all about our Royal Nonsuch Rapscallions, and as much of the raft voyage as I had time to. And as we struck into the town, and up through the middle of it, it was as much as 8:30. Then, here comes a raging rush of people with torches, and an awful whooping and yelling, and banging tin pans and blowing horns. And we jumped to one side to let 'em go by. And as they went by, I see they had the king and the duke astraddle of a rail. That is, I knowed it was the king and the duke, though they was all over tar and feathers, and didn't look like nothing in the world that was human. Just looked like a couple of monstrous big soldier plumes. Well, it made me sick to see it, and I was sorry for them poor pitiful rascals. Seemed like I couldn't ever feel any hardness against them any more in the world. It was a dreadful thing to see. Human beings can be awful cruel to one another. We see we was too late. Couldn't do no good. We asked some stragglers about it, and they said everybody went to the show looking very innocent, and laid low and kept dark till the poor old king was in the middle of his cavortins on the stage. Then somebody give a signal, and the house rose up and went for them. So we poked along back home, and I weren't feeling so brash as I was before, but kind of ornery and humble and to blame somehow, though I hadn't done nothing. But that's always the way. It don't make no difference whether you do right or wrong. A person's conscience ain't got no sense and just goes for him anyway. If I had a yaller dog that didn't know more than a person's conscience does, I would pison him. It takes up more room than all the rest of a person's insides, and yet ain't no good no how. Tom Sawyer says the same. Chapter 34. The Hut by the Ash Hopper. Outrageous. Climbing the Lightning Rod. Troubled with Witches. We stopped talking and got to thinking. By and by, Tom says, "Looky here, Huck, what fools we are to not think of it before. I bet I know where Jim is." "No, where?" "In that hut down by the ash hopper. Why, looky here, when we was at dinner, didn't you see a nigger man go in there with some vittles?" "Yes." "What do you think the vittles was for?" "For a dog." "So'd I." "Well, it wasn't for a dog." "Why?" "Because part of it was watermelon." "So it was. I noticed it." "Well, it does beat all that I never thought about a dog not eating watermelon. It shows how a body can see and don't see at the same time." "Well, the nigger unlocked the padlock when he went in, and he locked it again when he came out. He fetched Uncle a key about the time he got up from the table. Same key, I bet. Watermelon shows man. Lock shows prisoner. And it ain't likely there's two prisoners on such a little plantation, and where the people's all so kind and good. Jim's the prisoner." "All right. I'm glad we found it out detective fashion. I wouldn't give shucks for any other way. Now, you work your mind and study out a plan to steal Jim, and I'll study out one too, and we'll take the one we like best." What a head for just a boy to have. If I had Tom Sawyer's head, I wouldn't trade it off to be a duke, nor mate of a steamboat, nor clown in a circus, nor nothing I can think of. I went to thinking out a plan, but only just to be doing something. I knowed very well where the right plan was going to come from. Pretty soon, Tom says, "Ready?" "Yes," I says. "All right, bring it out." "My plan is this," I says. "We can easy find out if it's Jim in there, then get up my canoe tomorrow night and fetch my raft over from the island. Then the first dark night that comes, steal the key out of the old man's breeches after he goes to bed and shove off down the river on the raft with Jim, hiding daytimes and running nights, the way me and Jim used to do before. Wouldn't that plan work?" "Work? Why, certainly it would work. like rats a-fightin', but it's too blame simple. There ain't nothing to it. What's the good of a plan that ain't no more trouble than that? It's as mild as goose milk. Why, Huck, it wouldn't make no more talk than breaking into a soap factory. I never said nothing, because I weren't expecting nothing different. But I knowed mighty well that whenever he got his plan ready, it wouldn't have none of them objections to it. And it didn't. He told me what it was, and I see in a minute it was worth 15 of mine for style, and would make Jim just as free a man as mine would, and maybe get us all killed besides. So I was satisfied, and said we would waltz in on it. I needn't tell what it was here, because I knowed it wouldn't stay the way it was. I knowed he would be changing it around every which way as we went along, and heaving in new bullnesses whenever he got a chance. And that is what he done. Well, one thing was dead sure, and that was that Tom Sawyer was in earnest and was actually going to help steal that nigger out of slavery. That was the thing that was too many for me. Here was a boy that was respectable and well brung up and had a character to lose, and folks at home that had characters, and he was bright and not leather-headed and knowing and not ignorant, and not mean, but kind, and yet here he was, without any more pride or rightness or feeling than to stoop to this business, and make himself ashamed, and his family ashamed, before everybody. I couldn't understand it no way at all. It was outrageous, and I knowed I ought to just up and tell him so, and so be his true friend, and let him quit the thing right where he was and save himself. And I did start to tell him, but he shut me up and says, "Don't you reckon I know what I'm about? Don't I generally know what I'm about?" "Yes." "Didn't I say I was going to help steal the nigger?" "Yes." "Well then." That's all he said, and that's all I said. It weren't no use to say any more, because when he said he'd do a thing, he always done it. But I couldn't make out how he was willing to go into this thing. So I just let it go, and never bothered no more about it. If he was bound to have it so, I couldn't help it. When we got home, the house was all dark and still. So we went on down to the hut by the ash hopper for to examine it. We went through the yard so as to see what the hounds would do. They notice, and didn't make no more noise than country dogs is always doing when anything comes by the night. When we got to the cabin, we took a look in the front and the two sides. And on the side I wasn't acquainted with, which was the north side, we found a square window hole, up tolerable high, with just one stout board nailed across it. I says, "Here's the ticket. This hole's big enough for Jim to get through if we wrench off the board." Tom says, "It's as simple as tit-tat-toe, three in a row, and as easy as playing hooky. I should hope we can find a way that's a little more complicated than that, Huck Finn." "Well then," I says, "how'll it do to saw him out the way I done before I was murdered that time?" "That's more like," he says. "It's real mysterious and troublesome and good," he says. "But I bet we can find a way that's twice as long. There ain't no hurry. Let's keep on looking round." Betwixt the hut and the fence, on the back side, was a lean-to that joined the hut at the eaves and was made out of plank. It was as long as the hut, but narrow, only about 6 foot wide. The door to it was at the south end, and was padlocked. Tom, he went to the soap kettle and searched round and fetched back the iron thing they lift the lid with. So he took it and prized out one of the staples. The chain fell down, and we opened the door and went in and shut it and struck a match and see the shed was only built against a cabin and hadn't no connection with it, and there weren't no floor to the shed nor nothing in it but some old rusty played-out hoes and spades and picks and a crippled plow. The match went out, and so did we, and shoved in the staple again, and the door was locked as good as ever. Tom was joyful. He says, "Now we're all right. We'll dig him out. It'll take about a week." Then we started for the house, and I went in the back door. You only have to pull a buckskin latch string. They don't fasten the doors. But that weren't romantical enough for Tom Sawyer. No way would do but he must climb up the lightning rod. But after we got up halfway about three times, and missed fire and fell every time, and the last time most busted his brains out, he thought he'd got to give it up. But after he was rested, he allowed he'd give her one more turn for luck, and this time he made the trip. In the morning, we was up at break of day, and down to the nigger cabins to pet the dogs and make friends with the nigger that fed Jim, if it was Jim that was being fed. The niggers was just getting through breakfast and starting for the fields, and Jim's nigger was piling up a tin pan with bread and meat and things, and while the others was leaving, the key come from the house. This nigger had a good-natured, chuckle-headed face, and his wool was all tied up in little bunches with thread. That was to keep witches off. He said the witches was pestering him awful these nights, and making him see all kinds of strange things, and hear all kinds of strange words and noises, and he didn't believe he was ever witched so long before in his life. He got so worked up, and got to running on so about his troubles, he forgot all about what he'd been a-going to do. So Tom says, "What's the vittles for? Going to feed the dogs?" The nigger kind of smiled around gradually over his face, like when you heave a brickbat in a mud puddle. And he says, "Yes, Mars Sid, a dog. Curious dog, too. Does you want to go and look at him?" "Yes," I hunch Tom and whispers. "You going right here in the daybreak? That weren't the plan." "No, it weren't, but it's the plan now." So, drat him, we went along, but I didn't like it much. When we got in, we couldn't hardly see anything, it was so dark. But Jim was there, sure enough, and could see us. And he sings out, "Why, Huck! And good land, ain't that Mr. Tom?" I just knowed how it would be. I just expected it. I didn't know nothing to do. And if I had, I couldn't have done it, because that nigger busted in and says, "Why, the gracious sakes, do he know you, gentlemen?" We could see pretty well now. Tom, he looked at the nigger, steady and kind of wondering, and says, "Does who know us?" "Why, this yere runaway nigger." "I don't reckon he does. But what put that idea into your head?" "What put it there? Didn't he just this minute sing out like he knowed you?" Tom says, in a puzzled-up kind of way, "Well, that's mighty curious. Who sung out? When did he sing out? What did he sing out?" And turns to me perfectly calm and says, "Did you hear anybody sing out?" Of course, there weren't nothing to be said but the one thing, so I says, "No, I ain't heard nobody say nothing." Then he turns to Jim and looks him over like he never seen him before and says, "Did you sing out?" "No, sir," says Jim. "I ain't said nothing, sir." "Not a word?" "No, sir, I ain't said a word." "Did you ever see us before?" "No, sir, not as I knows on." So Tom turns to the nigger, which was looking wild and distressed, and says, kind of severe, "What do you reckon's the matter with you, anyway? What made you think somebody sung out?" "Oh, it's the dad blame witches, sir, and I wished I was dead, I do. They's always at it, sir, and they most kill me, they scares me so. Please to don't tell nobody about it, sir, or old Miss Silas, he'll scold me. Casey say there ain't no witches. I just wish to goodness he was here now. Then what would he say? I just bet he couldn't find no way to get around it this time. But it's always just so. People that sot stays sot. They won't look into nothing and find it out for themselves. And when you find it out and tell them about it, they don't believe you. Tom gave him a dime and said he wouldn't tell anybody and told him to buy some more thread to tie up his wool with, and then looks at Jim and says, I wonder if Uncle Silas is going to hang this nigger. If I was to catch a nigger that was ungrateful enough to run away, I wouldn't give him up. I'd hang him. And while the nigger stepped to the door to look at the dime and bite it to see if it was good, he whispers to Jim and says, Don't ever let on to know us. And if you hear any digging going on nights, it's us. We're going to set you free. Jim only had time to grab us by the hand and squeeze it. Then the nigger come back, and we said we'd come again sometime if the nigger wanted us to. And he said he would, more particular if it was dark, because the witches went for him mostly in the dark, and it was good to have folks around then.